Welcome to the King's Country Podcast. My name is Brett Finger. I'm joined by Andrew Schnicker and Ryan Henkel. Gentlemen, how are we doing this week?
Doing great.
Doing good.
Okay. Hockey's in the
One
air.
At a time, please.
Oh, sorry. Ryan, go ahead.
I'm just saying I'm doing good.
Doing great, man. Hockey's right. In the air. Got some good football results this weekend. It's a fun time.
It is a fun time. Training camp is well underway. We have our first week of training camp pretty much in the books. And we have lines, we have cuts, we have plenty of vaccinations. The Hurricanes are fully vaccinated as a team, and that includes the staff and whatnot, so there's nothing to worry about there as the season gets closer and all that. We've heard stories from across the league of other teams dealing with some issues in that department, but the Hurricanes are not one of them, so that's great. Takeaways from the first week of camp.
Well, you shouldn't read into the lines. The lines have been the same each day of camp so far, but you should not read into them.
Why is Svechnikov third line, Andrew? Why?
Because Rod Brind'Amour hates you, the fans, and wants you.
I thought you meant me specifically.
The things I've heard Rod say about Brett. Oh, man.
No, I mean, look, I mean, we've all seen, you know, Rod kind of likes to try to like spread things out and have his scorers across different lines and build some depth. I am not a fan of Svechnikov with Stalin fast. I think we've seen that in the past, and it hasn't really worked out. I would rather see Nino Niederreiter there, especially if you're trying to get Jesperi Kotkaniemi going in the top six in the wing, which I think is a good call. The interesting one for me is obviously the defensive pairs the Hurricanes have. If you think they're going to carry seven defensemen on opening night, the Hurricanes have four new defensemen in Jacob Slavin, or not Jacob Slavin. I'm going to talk about Jacob Slavin in a second. Ethan Bear, Ian Cole, Tony D'Angelo, and Brendan Smith. Obviously, that spot next to Jacob Slavin that Dougie Hamilton has occupied for the last three years is up for grabs. There's a few different ways they could go with that. They could have, and obviously it's only been a few days of camp, so they can look at different stuff. They could reunite Slavin and Pesci. I can't see Brind'Amour spending much camp time on that because I think he knows that if they get into the season and the pairs aren't working out, that he can always just go to that.
It's a proven commodity.
Yeah. And that's, which is kind of part of the gist of what he says about like not flipping out about the lines in camp. Like he knows he can put Svechnikov, Aho, and Teräväinen together and he knows what he's going to get. Like he does not need to spend camp reps on that. I mean, you could put Tony D'Angelo with Slavin. Obviously you kind of have your balance there in terms of a defensive guy and offensive guy. However, if you think that Dougie Hamilton had defensive issues, I have some bad news for you about Tony D'Angelo.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a good idea. The matchups that Slavin's going to go up against is not something I would want to expose D'Angelo to.
Not quite. What they have done so far, and that I think is the most interesting and probably gives the Hurricanes' defensive core the highest ceiling, is play Ethan Bear with Slavin. I think Ethan Bear is somebody who has a lot of potential. Things didn't go great for him in Edmonton last year. He had some injuries and stuff, but the year before in Edmonton, he was really good. I think he's a guy who's got some offensive upside. He can skate. He can move the puck. He can defend well. I think that's a move that a lot of Oilers fans were upset about and wish that he'd gotten more opportunity there. I'm really interested to see what Ethan Bear can do for the Hurricanes and what he can do playing with Jacob Slavin. He's obviously not going to come in here and be Dougie Hamilton, but I think he can offer a lot of upside in that spot.
I think that pairing is going to be really, really good. I really like the Bear addition from the jump. He's young. He has tons of upside. Even last year, I mean, it's questionable how Edmonton kind of handled him and used him and stuff. But even last year, I mean, a very noticeable step forward in his game from year one. So, yeah, I think that's going to end up being pretty good. And I think he's going to pair really well with Slavin.
Yeah, I think Barry is going to be probably the most interesting player to kind of follow, you know, at least early into the season. Because if he does, you know, do well, meshes, he's like a future, you know, defenseman for the Canes. Like, he'd be another 4 to 5 year deal defenseman. Like, you know, Bear has a super amount of potential, and the Canes are kind of missing. They have like a really big stopgap right now with their defensive prospects. They don't have like a ton of guys who are really ready for like a top four role. And if they can get Bear clicks, like, that like solves a lot of their issues.
Looking elsewhere, Jesperi Kotkaniemi has been playing with Teravainen and Trocheck. Obviously, that will change as camp goes on, the season gets closer and goes on. So, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, he is here. He is number 82, which is cool. You know, 82 is a good. I think 82 is a good number.
He's here. He's got it. It's a cool number. I've noticed seeing him at camp. He bears a striking resemblance to Andre Nestrashil, I think.
Wow.
So, you know, make of that what you will. that line is...
It's fair to say Kokonami is the poor man's Andre Nestrashil.
Hey, man, Andre Nestrashil, before he had that injury, was looking like the Hurricanes might have had something there.
If he's anything like Nestrashil, things won't end well here.
Well, let's hope they do.
Yes. Slightly higher upside, perhaps, on Kotkaniemi.
That line is interesting. I like Kotkaniemi with Trocheck. You figure it's probably going to end up being Natchez with them, because, like, have we seen Teravainen and Trocheck, like, at all, really?
No. Only power play.
Teravainen missing so much time.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, that's like an, I mean, you figure, like, I mean, like, Kotkaniemi and Trocheck are both kind of, well, I guess Kotkaniemi is more of a playmaker, but Trocheck is a goal scorer, and you put Teravainen with a guy like that. But I like Kotkaniemi playing on the wing with one of the Hurricanes' top two centers. Again, probably Trocheck, but I think you have to, given the investment that you made in him and what you've, you know, are kind of saying you think you can be, you have to put him in the best position possible to succeed. And I like putting him in that spot a lot.
Yeah, just like, I think also you paired like Teravainen and Kotkaniemi together, and you have two like really, really strong defensive wingers. So it's like, you know, you have Jordan Staal and Jesper Fast to like shut down people, but you get a line of Kotkaniemi and Teravainen, you're going to terrorize a lot of opponents and control a lot more, you know, puck battles and possession of play.
Yeah, it's kind of funny thinking about like Kotkaniemi and Teravainen combined, because both are, I mean, Teravainen's like elite, top tier possession player. And in Kotkaniemi last year, I mean, he was really good defensively. I mean, outstanding on defensive zone breakouts. So it's interesting. It's like, if you have those two together, how they're going to have the puck a lot. And it's just about, you know, turning that into goals, because Kotkaniemi is more of a playmaking forward, but the playmaking hasn't led to goals over the last two seasons. Teravainen, obviously also playmaker, whose playmaking does lead to goals. So it'll be interesting to see if those two stay together. I think it could be interesting, and I think it depends on who's in the middle. And if it's Trocheck and he has the kind of scoring touch that he had last year, I mean, that looks really interesting to me on paper.
Yeah, and you know what we know is, like, again, always something to emphasize. Don't buy into what you see in training camp. It's training camp for a reason. And, you know, I think this is just a time for Rod to, you know, see if things work. See if, like, he can get these guys clicking or chemistry. And, like, if it doesn't work, then when it's actually game time, you go back to the guys that, you know, play together, know each other. And everything's hunky-dory, I think.
Everything's hunky-dory. I mean, it's September 26th. We need to talk about something. We have to talk about these lines. I don't care what Rob Brind'Amour says. I don't care what anybody says. We're going to talk about the 5-year projection of Kotkaniemi Teravainen, and we're going to do it every week until the season starts.
I mean, he said don't read into the lines in training camp last year, and then, like, the lines on day one of training camp, I'm pretty sure were the opening night lines. Now, training camp last year was, like, 10 minutes, but...
Also true. Still. So, yeah, a lot of interesting things. Is there any other big takeaways that y'all have from camp so far?
You have the two new goalies, which is obviously going to be a big thing, and they're going to kind of need to figure out that out throughout camp. But if there's one position you really can't get much out of in a practice, it's goalie, in terms of just like seeing what they are. I think the exhibition games are going to be really important there.
I think something interesting is from the prospect camps, you know, Seth Jarvis was looking really good. Like, we all know how good he is, but like, damn, was he really showcasing at that prospect tournament?
And he has to go back to junior, which is, again, everyone talks about it, but it's stupid. It doesn't make any sense. He should not be in juniors.
Yeah, and unfortunately, I mean, he's a guy who really would have needed to, like, blow the doors off in camp to have a chance at making the Canes, and he's been out the first couple of days. Brendan Moore said it's nothing serious, but he tweaked something, and they're being cautious. But you figure missing the first couple of days of camp already kind of sets him back a little bit in terms of that trying to make the team.
I don't know. I think it would be interesting if they just, like, kept him around for like a couple weeks to start the season and then sent him back. I don't think he's missing much by not having 2 weeks in the WHL. I think it would be interesting to kind of, you know, maybe get him in a game or two and then send him back and just be like, hey, this is the NHL. You can tag along with the team for a little bit, maybe learn a thing or two.
Yeah, I don't know if I could see Rod Brindamore doing that, but I also think that would be an interesting idea.
The Canadian Hockey League just needs to come to some sort of agreement with the AHL. Like, teams get like an exemption or something, like one player, like outstanding player exemptions, kind of like how like young 16-year-olds can play early or something. Like, you should be able to like graduate early. It's kind of crazy.
Jarvis was leading the AHL in scoring at the point that they made him go back to junior last year.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't have like a crazy year in the WHL last year, but it's like, I mean, who cares? Bored. I mean, he played in the AHL and was like dominant in that league, and it's like, all right, go down a level for 30 games. And it's in a weird season. It's like, whatever.
Yeah, I mean, like, if you were like, if I was at like a higher level of like my field and doing really well, and then they were like, nope, okay, go back down, and I'd probably be like, well, this is stupid. Like,
yeah.
I'm not saying that Jarvis did that. I'm just saying, like I think him not like absolutely lighting it up in the CHL, like, boredom could be a factor.
But yeah, I mean, he should be in the AHL, and he, on most teams, he's really knocking on the door of being in the NHL. But, you know, this team, especially after they got Kotkaniemi, I think that kind of settled it. You know, I think he would have had maybe had a shot, but not anymore.
You know, if the Canes were a team that really liked to rush player development, like in Montreal or something, that like just really rushed a young guy,
he would have been there last year.
Well, yeah. it's a different regime now, but don't tell that to Elias Lindholm.
Oof. Yeah. No, I think if they don't add Kotkaniemi or any other top nine forward, this is a much more interesting conversation about Jarvis, but there's not really a spot. I mean, I wouldn't hate the idea of him playing with Svechnikov and Staal instead of Jesper Fast. Although I don't think there's any way in hell that Brindamore is giving a rookie Staal's matchups with Staal.
Jesper Fast is also like, has some of the best defensive metrics like in the NHL, like even strength defensive metrics. He is like an excellent defensive winger. He brings like a lot that kind of goes unnoticed, like his forechecking, puck battles. It's like, just because he's not scoring goals doesn't mean, like, I know what you're saying. Like, I've seen that take from other people, like saying like third right wing is open, but like, you can't just pull out like your defensive shutdown specialist to put in like a rookie.
Yeah, no, and like there's not really a spot in the Hurricanes top nine, and you're not putting Seth Jarvis on the fourth line, so. It just is what it is. I mean, like, next year could be a lot more interesting for a guy like that, especially with, you know, guys like Trocheck and Niederreiter up for unrestricted free agency. So I would think there's a very good chance that next year he'll be in the NHL, but this year I just can't see it.
Yeah, I think he's definitely going to be in the NHL next year. I think there's a very good chance of that because, look, you have Nino, Trocheck, Natchez, Kotkaniemi all need new deals. Obviously, Natchez and Kotkaniemi are RFAs. They likely aren't going anywhere. At least one of Nino or Trocheck isn't going to be here. I think that's safe to say at this point.
Yeah.
As they hit UFA. And look, they're going to have to pay a lot more money to Natchez and Kotkaniemi. It's going to be at least $6.1 million, or unless they sign that like extension for $4 million or whatever that was rumored. But you're going to have to probably save a little money somewhere. Seth Jarvis is on ELC. That's potentially huge upside for a guy making less than $1 million against your cap.
Yeah, I'll make a hot take prediction. Nino Niederreiter walks. Like, the Canes and him just kind of, you know, he has a good season, but the Canes just can't, you know, afford to pay $5 to $6 million for a long-term deal. He signed somewhere like Seattle, and there's that they form like a short-term extension with Trocheck, and then they bring in Seth Jarvis, who wins Rookie of the Year Calder.
Oh wow. A series of really interesting predictions.
All of those things are going to happen.
If he played with Trocheck and Natchez, he probably could. Yeah, I think no matter what kind of year he has, it's pretty much a given that Niederreiter's gone. Because if he has a bad year, okay, well then they just don't want him back. If he has another really good year,
he's pricing himself out.
You shouldn't, honestly, pay a player like that at his age a long-term deal. The kind of style he plays, that can go badly very quick. See Ruutu Tuomo.
Yeah.
But
I mean, I don't know. I don't think he's as risky as like Ruutu or Ferland, but you shouldn't give him that.
Niederreiter's such an interesting player because he really does have a very unique play style where he's a sniper who's like an excellent like forechecker. He's an extremely aggressive net front forechecker, but he's also a sniper. It's like, yeah, it's such a weird dynamic, but it's so like good. He's such like a great unique goodie.
But like when the shot isn't on, his value tanks by a lot, even though his game is consistently solid and consistently like worthy of playing and paying. When he's not scoring, I mean, that's a big part of his game. So we saw a couple of years ago when he wasn't scoring, but he was still playing really well. But it's like you're getting paid $5.25 million or whatever. And when you're getting that kind of money, you need to produce offense. It's interesting. But yeah, Nino's probably clubhouse favorite to not be back after next year.
Well, it's like you just said, when you have a team like the Hurricanes who are in a competitive window, like, you need spots where you can replace a guy like that with like a good cheap player on an ELC, and that's what the Hurricanes have. I think Trocheck is going to be really interesting. I think part of that is going to depend on how ready they think one of Natchez or Kotkaniemi is to play center.
That was like part of my hot take. Is I think I don't know. I don't think Natchez or Kotkaniemi will be ready at like yet for 2C responsibilities, unless like, you know, they blow me away this year with like their play. But I think like they would need another year to a Trocheck. But thinking back on my hot take, I think somebody's going to offer him big money long term.
Yeah, if he has a similar season, then probably.
Top six center, maybe. Somebody will pay for that.
Who's on pace to score like 30 goals. Honestly, I feel like Kotkaniemi is closer to being ready for center duties than Natchez. Because, I mean, he's been a center the whole time in his NHL career. Has he been a great centerman? No, he has not been as good as Natchez, but he's played center consistently. I still don't really know what's going to happen here with Kotkaniemi. I think it could be boom or bust. Maybe he's just a decent player. Maybe that's the most likely outcome, but yeah, I don't know. I feel like in terms of playing center minutes, I think Kotkaniemi's closer, and it just depends on how good he can be in Carolina and how they handle him. I think that will determine whether he can be a second line center.
I'm gonna make like a stupid metaphor analogy. Kokaniemi was like a high grade clay that Montreal just tossed in the kiln, hoping that it formed into like a beautiful pot. And now the Canes have to take this like hardened lump of clay, try to chisel it into the shape that they need it to be. And if not, it'll just crumble.
Are you calling Brad Brindamore a potter?
I ain't calling him a. Actually, I don't have anything. Yeah.
Say where?
A what? Where could you go with that? What's the opposite of a potter?
I don't know. Harry. Draco. Draco Malfoy.
I'm not. I don't know anything about Harry Potter.
Oh man, this.
Yeah, I mean.
So about the power play. the other thing I think is interesting in camp is obviously A, with Dougie Hamilton gone, who is the primary quarterback of your number one power play or number two power play in the league last year, and Jake Bean gone, and Jake Gardner not going to be a factor this year because he's going on long-term IR with those back and hip injuries. You need two power play quarterbacks. I think their thought for the first one, and it's a good thought. I mean, it's why they signed him. It's for Tony DeAngelo to do it. 2 years ago with the Rangers when he had like 53 points, I think like 19 of them came on the power play. He's proven he's capable of that. Taking a little bit of a risk there, basically like with him as the most proven power play quarterback you have because he basically didn't play last year. But I think their logic there is sound. Power play quarterback too, though. There's nobody who's really done it. I think Ethan Bear will probably get the first crack there and they'll hope that he can do it. But like he never really played much power play at Edmonton. We do not need to see Jacob Slavin on the power play. I've seen it. Don't need to do it again. Brett Pesce is an underrated offensive guy at even strength. He's not a power play guy. If Ethan Bear can't do it, it's probably Brady Shea.
No,
but like,
please no. Don't even say that.
I don't really like that. Like the second power play quarterback is like. And one option I think could be, if none of the other guys work out, which like what we just talked about in terms of like D'Angelo not playing with Slavin, you really couldn't use a guy like Dougie Hamilton on like more than just the first power play unit because he played so much at even strength and on the penalty kill. Tony D'Angelo is probably not going to play nearly as much at even strength as Dougie Hamilton did. Nor is he, I would think, going to play at all on the penalty kill. So he, especially if he's really good at it, like he was in New York 2 years ago, he could be the kind of guy that you just leave out there for like most of a power play. And that's kind of just
the old Alex Ovechkin treatment.
Well, that's kind of what I was seeing. But like you get what I'm saying. Like if he plays like.
Yeah.
A ton on the power play, like it's not going to be that big a deal because he's probably not going to play as much, especially if these pairings hold and he's on the third pairing with Ian Cole at even strength. And I would be shocked if he plays like more than a few minutes on the entire year on the penalty kill.
Or Carolina can go for the fabled five forward power play.
Yeah, but I mean, like. I don't know. The thing with Ovechkin is like he can stay out there for 2 minutes because the dude doesn't move. With all due respect, he just stands in one spot. And D'Angelo, yeah.
Fair.
I mean, it's going to be interesting to see how D'Angelo fits and what they do with him because he's different offensively than Hamilton. I think Hamilton's more of your traditional quarterback. And D'Angelo's a guy who... When he's been at his best, he's a rover in the offensive zone. He's a guy that moves around. And if there's one thing that we have historically had a problem with Carolina's power play, is that they don't fucking move. They stand in the same place.
Yeah.
Especially in yes, the they are very stagnant. They're very predictable. And it'll be interesting to see how D'Angelo impacts that, or if he's just forced to stay at the top of the zone, which I think is not a good thing. So, outside of that, I think Bear is probably the safe bet for power play too. Outside of Bear, there isn't really another good option.
Like at all. Like there's not even really like you wouldn't feel remotely good about any of Slavin, Shea, or Pesci playing on the power play.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they do something like D'Angelo. Let's just say Bear is a flop at the power play, which I don't think he would be, but let's say he is.
I have high hopes for that, but
yeah. Let's just say maybe D'Angelo plays like a minute and a half, and then Slavin comes in for the final 30 seconds and for when the game goes back to 5-on-5 or something.
Not ideal, but yeah. I mean, they could.
I mean, I think that's more ideal than playing Tony D'Angelo for 2 minutes, because yeah, I just.
No, you're right. Especially like you said, I mean, and they should use him to create more movement on the power play, because like, especially once you get into the playoffs, that's been a big issue for them. And like, you got this player in Tony D'Angelo, you might as well use him to his strengths. Like,
yeah.
Elsewhere, a Hurricane legend is hanging him up, a 2-time Stanley Cup champion. At the end of the career, he just goes to Tampa, picks up 2 chips, and says, "All right, I'm done." Curtis McElhinney announces in the most Curtis McElhinney way possible his retirement, just by changing his Instagram bio to retired former NHL goalie or whatever. I miss Curtis McElhinney. That was a year.
Curtis McElhinney really adopted the late career LeSean McCoy method of just being on championship rosters and collecting rings. But he played, and I feel like this doesn't get talked about often enough, that 2018-19 season in terms of the Hurricanes like getting back to the playoffs and making a run to the Eastern Conference Final, Curtis McElhinney, who they got on waivers at the start of the season when Scott Darling was hurt, played a huge role in that. I mean, you look at what he did in the regular season and kind of the steady goaltending he helped provide them alongside Peter Mrazek, just with how, I mean, such a calm presence on the ice. And then in the Islanders series, Mrazek got hurt in game 2. McElhinney finished that game and then won games 3 and 4. So no, I mean, he was only a Hurricane for 1 year, but I think Curtis McElhinney played a very important part in Hurricanes history. Ultimately,
shout out Toronto for putting him on waivers.
Yeah.
Actually, another funny stat, like I looked at this like weeks ago, but Curtis McElhinney actually had one of the best high danger save percentages in the entire league that regular season too.
Yeah,
he was very good.
He was very good.
All right, I have the one other, and it's crazy to me thinking about bridging these two eras of him playing on that Hurricanes team, and also I remember I think it was a game, the last game or the last time before that the Hurricanes made the playoffs during 2008-09, I think it was like a game they played like the Calgary Flames and he was in net and they just shelled him. I think put up like 6 goals on him and Ray Whitney scored a hat trick. It's still funny to me to think about like two completely separate like eras, like literally a decade apart, and that, but still, like, that was the first thing I thought of when I saw that like they were getting Curtis McElhinney.
Goalies, you know, a decade apart, similar to Frederick Anderson. Yeah, a decade later,
true,
he's finally here.
Full circle,
and this podcast has come full circle because it's over this week. Thank you for listening to the Canes Country Podcast. A little training camp talk, little Curtis McElhinney talk, etc. We will be hopefully talking about even more interesting things in the coming weeks, as the season is literally just a couple weeks away. Andrew Schnicker, Ryan Henkel, where can the people follow you on Twitter and only Twitter?
You can follow me at ASCHNITT53.
You can follow me at RYANHENKEL_.
You can follow me on Twitter at Brett Finger. You can follow Canes Country at Canes Country. Instagram, Canes Country Picks, P-I-X. Go read the site. We have tons of content going up as the season gets closer and we preview things and wrap up training camp and all that. Subscribe to / follow the Canes Country podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher. Wherever you listen to podcasts, you can listen to the Canes Country podcast. And we will be back next week to talk about more training camp developments. Who knows? Maybe something big will happen in the next week. You know, that's what training camp's known for, right? Big, huge news, right?
You typically don't want huge news out of training camp because that typically means one thing.
Goodbye.